It is Monday, January 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, a false middle missile alert over the weekend causes panic in Hawaii.
It's unfathomable to me that somebody could hit a button and, you know, something didn't pop up and say, are you sure you want to send off an alert?
One quarter of the world could become significantly drier because of climate change. And we look at the new animated feature film, Early Man. It's all ahead. A Hawaii State Emergency Management Agency spokesman said human error and a lack of adequate safeguards led to Saturday's false missile alert that alarmed the public on the Central Pacific Archipelago. The message, which went uncorrected for 38 minutes, stated, emergency alert, ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. State Governor David Ige said the alert was sent out during an employee shift change by a push of a button and that there was no automated process to get the word out that it was a false alarm. He apologized and said steps are being taken to make sure it doesn't happen again. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Christian Nielsen, in an appearance on the Fox News Sunday program, urged the public not to lose confidence in such early warning systems.
So I would hate for anybody not to abide by alert and warnings coming from government systems. They can trust government systems. We test them every day. This was a very unfortunate mistake, but these alerts are vital. Seconds and minutes can save lives.
The Federal Communications Commission has jurisdiction over such wireless alerts. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai called the false alarm unacceptable, causing a wave of panic. He said such mistakes undermine public confidence in the alerting system and reduce their effectiveness. Tulsi Gabbard is a Hawaii congresswoman who appeared Sunday on the ABC program This Week.
You can only imagine the panic, the terror, the chaos and confusion that ensued when over a million people in Hawaii, plus many visitors who were visiting Hawaii, got that alert on their cell phones, now understanding that they literally just have minutes. Taking this threat seriously, they've got minutes to say goodbye to their loved ones, to find their loved ones, to try to find some kind of shelter somewhere, which there are no designated nuclear bomb shelters in Hawaii. I went through that same thing when I got that message on my phone, wondering where my family is, what they were doing. I immediately called Hawaii officials and civil defense, asked them what's going on here, and was told right away that there's no incoming missile threat.
She called it an epic failure of leadership and demanded accountability. Ralph Kosa is president of the Hawaii-based Pacific Forum, a security think tank. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty such mishaps cannot be allowed to happen.
It's unfathomable to me that somebody could hit a button and, you know, something didn't pop up and say, are you sure you want to send off an alert? You try to delete a message in an email and they ask you if you really want to delete it. It's quite remarkable that our system didn't have any type of precaution built into it.
I know you were on travel, but what have you heard about what happened?
My wife, who was home, when she got the alert as she was out walking, she headed back to home, but she did not panic because while she got this email alert, the sirens that are supposed to warn us were not going off. So her initial thought was this is probably a hack or a mistake. But just to be safe, she headed to the basement of our condo with other neighbors, and they just sat there and waited. The fact that it took 38 minutes for the state to correct the mistake was really inexcusable. So I don't think there was, at least in my family, there wasn't panic, but there certainly was anxiety, and it should have been addressed much quicker.
Were problems known beforehand about such a potential problem?
Obviously not. In fact, we weren't even aware that there was this email alerting system. All the people in Hawaii knew, as far as I know, was that there was a siren that would go off similar to the siren that go off for a tsunami warning, but with a different modulation so that we would know it was an air raid as opposed to a tsunami warning. But as I said, those sirens never sounded, which caused at least some people to assume that this must have been a mistake.
Ralph, are residents of Hawaii on edge with regard to a possible North Korean missile attack?
For the most part, no. When I do my speeches and all, I tell people there's a less than 1% chance. Right now, there's no indication that the North Koreans are even capable of firing a missile with any kind of accuracy with a warhead that would survive reentry. I think most people here understand that, but certainly something like this that, you know, says this is not a drill certainly gets people's attention and will probably make them more nervous in the future.
Hawaii is home to Pacific Command, which is the Navy's Pacific Fleet and other military bases. It revived monthly testing of nuclear attack sirens in November amid tensions with North Korea. Time now for social media. I'm joined by International Edition's Lori London.
Today we have two stories about the impact of social media. One has a positive outcome, the other not so much. So let's start with the one that can have a negative impact, and we'll end on a lighter note. Our addiction to social media, which is increasing rapidly, could have a big impact on our sleep, and that in turn can impact health. A new study finds that young people who often check social media in the 30 minutes before bedtime are at an increased risk of sleep disturbance compared to those who rarely check social media 30 minutes or less before bedtime. Experts say the strong association between social media use and sleep could have big implications for the health and well-being of young adults. There could be a few reasons for this. First, the obvious, it's reducing the time spent sleeping. But also, it could increase a person's anxiety, making it harder to switch off thoughts, feelings, and emotions from things they've seen on social media. Also, the blue light emitted from the screens of smartphones apparently can inhibit melatonin levels, important to helping us fall asleep. Social media is also the opposite of exercise, which helps us sleep. Social media causes many of us to become more sedentary. And now here's the good report on how social media may be helping us. It's changed the game for airline customer service. Travelers who have not been treated well have the ability now to express their displeasure almost instantly to a worldwide audience. It happened, you may recall, when a passenger was forcibly removed from a United Express flight with a little help from a viral cell phone video. Well, now social media is creating a whole new reality for the airline industry, so much so that many companies are now staffing 24-hour social media departments to offer fast responses to possible complaints that could go viral. So the threat of being viewed negatively on social media is causing airlines to take a much more aggressive approach to customer service and fixing problems before they get blown up on the internet.
Thanks very much, Lori. That's social media editor Lori London. Here are some of the top news stories trending. A deadly double suicide bomb attack hits Baghdad. The UN Security Council makes a quick visit to Afghanistan. A report says Al-Shabaab is conscripting Somali children as young as 8 years old. And President Donald Trump says that he is not a racist. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists have found 8 sites on Mars that suggest there are a number of very big chunks of water ice that make their way deep within the surface of the red planet. The U.S. Geological Survey-led study, using high-resolution imagery and topography from NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, gathered never-before-seen details about ice sheets on Mars. The images and data reveals that some of the observed ice chunks begin within a few meters below the surface of Mars and are thought to extend extend to more than 91 meters in depth. The study's lead author, Colin Dundas, a scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey, says there's ice under about a third of the Martian surface. While previous missions already revealed the existence of water ice deposits on Mars, this new study provided an analysis of the vertical structure and thickness of the ice sheets. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Russia warns of additional penalties for U.S. media. More than a quarter of the world's land could become significantly drier in coming decades, according to new research from Britain's University of East Anglia and China's Southern University of Science and Technology. Scientists warn that changes in precipitation and evaporation linked to climate change could increase the likelihood of domino effects like prolonged droughts and forest fires. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Scientists looked at the effect of a 2-degree increase in temperatures on the aridity of different regions, a measure of the dryness of the land's surface. Manoj Joshi of the University of East Anglia was part of the research team.
And what we found was that the regions that changed significantly, substantially, compared to the year-to-year variations of the past, were regions such as Southeast China, Central North America, northern parts of South America, Southern Africa, Mediterranean.
The Paris Climate Agreement, signed in 2015, aims to limit global warming to 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels.
What we found was that in these 6 regions that we looked at, you can actually limit the amount of aridification if you stay underneath a 2-degree temperature rise globally.
So what would a significantly drier world look like?
The future average climate will be like the drier years of the present day. It's like encountering a moderate drought that never stops. If you are interested in impacts such as drought, if you're interested in agriculture, even things like heat stress and knock-on effects of drought, potentially forest fires, for instance, for all these impacts, aridity is really important.
California has just suffered some of the worst forest fires in the state's history. More than 5,500 square kilometers were engulfed by fire in 2017 and almost 50 people killed.
Climate change will make certain things more likely. I mean, forest fires and dry regions may be one of those things. But you can't take a certain impact and just assume this is because of climate change. That's not how climate science works.
Many regions are already experiencing chain reaction effects of rising temperatures. The researchers warn that agriculture, biodiversity and water quality would all be impacted as vast areas of land become drier. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Russia's government is threatening additional penalties against U.S. media operating in Russia. The threat is the latest in a back-and-forth dispute between Washington and Moscow over the treatment of media outlets operating in each other's countries. From Moscow, Charles Maines reports.
Ever since U.S. intelligence agencies issued a report last January claiming a Russian media role in alleged Kremlin meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election, the media have been garnering unwelcome headlines. First, the U.S. demanded the Russian state-affiliated RT News Service register under the Foreign Agents Registration Act, or FARA, an 80-year-old law first introduced to counter Nazi propaganda during World War II. In response, Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a law designating foreign media as foreign agents. Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and several affiliated projects with U.S. government backing were soon added to the list. Then, Russia's state-affiliated media outlet Sputnik announced that the United States was forcing its parent company, RIA Global, to register under FARA by early February. In a statement issued online, Russia's embassy in Washington called the move unacceptable and alleged that Russian journalists face problems with visas, as well as harassment from U.S. security services. While the U.S. has denied those allegations, Russia also warned that unavoidable mirror measures would be forthcoming without elaborating. Yet the media issue wasn't the only irritant surrounding Russia's debated role in the U.S. elections. The Kremlin denounced a U.S. congressional report issued by Senate Democrats that accused Russia of mounting a protracted and asymmetrical assault on democracy in the U.S. and elsewhere. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov called the report part of an ongoing baseless and groundless campaign against Russia. RT editor-in-chief Margarita Simonyan also weighed in, deriding the report as boring. "Wake me up in 5 years when they find nothing and don't want to admit there was no Russian interference," she said. Yet the issue is unlikely to disappear soon. While the U.S. Congress has multiple ongoing investigations into Russian election meddling, Russian lawmakers have been conducting their own. Of key interest to the Duma is how U.S. media might seek to influence Russia's presidential elections, slated for March 2018. Charles for VOA News, Moscow.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. A new animated feature from four-time Oscar-winning director Nick Park, Early Man, stars the voices of Tom Hiddleston, Oscar winner Eddie Redmayne, and Game of Thrones star Maisie Williams. As VOA's David Byrd reports, the movie looks at the clash of technology and human nature from a whimsical perspective.
Meet Doug's tribe. They rocked the Stone Age. But a new age is dawning.
The Age of Stone is over. Long live the Age of Bronze.
Doug and his tribe are firmly in the Stone Age. Their biggest pursuit is hunting rabbits. But one day, their peaceful existence is overturned when the evil Lord Nuth rides in on his bronze-clad mammoth. Nuth wants to take the tribe's valley to mine it for precious metals. But Doug challenges Nuth's soccer team to a match for the valley. Eddie Redmayne provides the voice of Doug and said at the film's premiere that he has loved the work at Aardman Animations for years and was delighted to work on the film.
I was obsessed with that Creature Comforts and Wallace and Gromit, and so I never thought I would get this call. And getting to work with Nick Park and going down to Aardman in Bristol to their studios, it's pretty unbelievable.
Maisie Williams, best known for her work as Arya Stark on the hit HBO fantasy drama Game of Thrones, plays Guna, a talented football player who is not allowed to play the game because she is female. Guna switches sides and helps Doug's team in the pivotal football match. Maisie Williams says that she hopes her character serves as an inspiration to young girls worldwide.
And I think it's so beautiful to play a character that's so strong for a film that will be watched by a lot of the younger generation and will be watched by a lot of kids and will influence a lot of kids. And I think like everything about her, from her look to her story arc to like how she changes over the film and to, you know, the values that she stands by, I think she's just wonderful, wonderful for everyone.
Tom Hiddleston provides the voice for Lord Nuth, who speaks with a comically overdone French accent. Director Nick Park says that the decision to give Knuth that accent was made for one reason, because it was funny.
Just giving him a French accent seemed to work the best. And Tom can do anything. He can mimic anyone and do any accent. So we tried different things, but we landed on the French just because it seemed to suit his buffoonery and he's a sort of middle manager who's a climber in society and quite avaricious. And he's not a kind of hard villain. He's not a sort of mustache-twirling. He's not a dark villain. He's more of a comedy villain.
Even in the age of computer-generated graphics, this film was done using the plasticine stop-motion animation that Nick Park has been famous for in the Wallace and Gromit films, as well as the award-winning Shaun the Sheep television series. Early Man opens in U.S. theaters February 16th. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Thanks very much, David. And in other news, Afghan forces are planning to hand over the security responsibilities to the local forces of rural communities. They've recently captured these communities from Taliban and Islamic State militants in eastern Nangarhar, a province that borders Pakistan. Nangarhar provincial officials said hundreds of local men, armed by Afghan National Directorate of Security, are ready to fight against IS in Koyani District, where joint Afghan security forces recently ended a 15-day-long anti-IS operation. Atula Koyani, a spokesperson for the governor of Nangarhar, said, "For the time, we have 300 men ready to protect their villages, and if the situation requires, we will arm more people to fight." According to the Afghan officials, the total number of such forces in Nangarhar province is close to 100. And Hayat Khan, chief of Nangarhar Coordination Center of Uprising Local Forces, says, "We have 500 local forces in Panjir Agam District, 300 in Koyani District, and another 100 in Kot District." Afghan officials claim the force in Pashir Agam District is effectively providing security to the district and to the Tora Bora area, once the stronghold of slain Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
On the third day of each January, Americans honor the memory of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Dr. King, a Baptist minister from the southern state of Alabama, was a leader in the U.S. civil rights movement, advocating social change through nonviolent means. On January 15th, he would have celebrated his 86th birthday. Believing that change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability, but comes through continuous struggle, Dr. King organized and participated in mass action boycotts, sit-ins, peaceful marches, and other nonviolent acts of civil disobedience. Dr. King once stated that an individual who breaks a law that conscience tells him is unjust and who willingly accepts the penalty of imprisonment in order to arouse the conscience of the community over its injustice is in reality expressing the highest respect for the law. And so activists, sometimes deliberately, but peacefully and respectfully, broke laws aimed at segregating the white citizenry from the non-white, thus hoping to bring attention to the inherent unfairness of such legislation. Thus, when a black seamstress named Rosa Parks broke the law in Montgomery, Alabama, by refusing to give up her seat on a bus to a white passenger and subsequently was jailed for her transgression, her plight generated national attention and increasing sympathy for her cause across the country. Dr. King's and the civil rights movement's greatest achievements came in 1964 with the passage of the Civil Rights Act, which outlawed segregation in public places, as well as employment discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, gender, or national origin. The Civil Rights Act spawned the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which forbids racial discrimination in voting, and the 1968 Fair Housing Act, which prohibits discrimination in housing and financing for the purchase of a home based on race and national origin. Dr. King was 39 years old when he died by an assassin's bullet on April 4, 1968. But his legacy lives on. In the fullness of time, segregationist laws were repealed. Discrimination is a legally punishable and punished offense.